Hello, and welcome to the Startup Shaman podcast, where we explore the intersection of higher consciousness, startups, and enlightened entrepreneurship. With us today, we have my friend Dustin DiPerna, who is an author, meditation teacher, and entrepreneur himself. He is the founder of Bright Alliance, a hub for visionaries, courses, and enlightened conversations, and co-founder of Synergy Forum, an international initiative dedicated to empowering the wave of awakening and collective action around the world. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, Dustin, how you doing?
I'm great, Kirill. Hi.
Hi. Really great to have you. It's an honor to have you on my couch here in Berkeley on a beautiful day. So maybe for our audience, could you just say a few words about who you are, what you do?
I'd be happy to. So my name is Dustin DiPerna, and I am an author and a meditation teacher and an entrepreneur. I've been living here in the San Francisco area for the past 5 years, and most of my attention goes to one of two things. It either goes to helping to promote and inspire new authors and writers and talent that I find who have an interest in what you might call upgrading consciousness. And I spend the rest of my time actually upgrading other people's consciousness. I spend the rest of my time working with people directly in both mentorship and coaching and meditation instruction to help them begin to understand what's possible for us as human beings. And I divide my life between those two things. They both are generative. They both create income for me. At the same time, they're so deeply rewarding. And I often say that I love what I do because I can't imagine doing anything else. So I feel like, in a certain sense, I've never, haven't gone to work for something like 10 years because I've been doing what I love. So it's a great feeling to be connected like that.
Sounds amazing. So I'm curious to ask you more about the upgrade work that you do with people.
Please.
What does that look like? What's the trajectory of it? What does it take people to?
So we can speak about two types of upgrading. One is a more conventional type of upgrade, where, as we were just speaking about a bit before this interview, there's ways that you can help increase people's conventional skills, how they interact with the world, how they face problems, how they solve problems, and how they step up in their capacity for performance excellence and these types of things. Those are more conventional ways of upgrading and all things that I enjoy doing with people. But the more interesting way that I help people upgrade is by slowly or sometimes immediately helping people understand how they contract from a deeper space of openness in any given moment. So most of us as human beings are coming from a sense of self that's quite separate from the other people around us, separate from the environment around us. And I often describe that as a really inefficient place to act, to work, and to design from. And that as we deepen in our capacity to recognize what's actually happening, as we begin to allow our awareness to expand beyond this sense of self-contraction, I often find that people, and in my own experience, enter into one of the most innovative and creative spaces possible. And so it's by helping people to expand or to upgrade beyond the limitations of a separate self that I think we hold some of the keys to one of the biggest shifts in creativity and entrepreneurship possible. And so when I first heard about what you were doing with Startup Shaman, I was so attracted to it because it, to me, feels like one of these major keys in the evolution of consciousness to bring this bridge between upgrading or introducing higher levels of consciousness and entrepreneurship and the startup world. These two things are, I think, at the heart of rebooting the world into a whole new phase.
Fascinating. That's great. So I'm curious to ask you a little bit more about, when you say expanding the sense of self, what does that really mean? Like, you know, so we have a conventional understanding of, you know, perhaps a scientific understanding, a Western rational understanding of self. I am myself, which usually means my mind, my body, my personality, right? And that's definitely, I think for a lot of people, is the primary anchor, the primary orientation.
So what does it mean to expand the sense of self from beyond that conventional understanding?
It's a great question. So thank you for the opening. So many of us are familiar with what's often called mindfulness. You know, I think particularly here in the Bay Area, we hear a lot of people talking about, you know, being mindful of things or actually even doing a mindfulness practice in meditation. And, you know, I'm a huge supporter of anything that helps people become more present and more aware in any given moment. So I think that's great. But I think there's limitations in stopping at mindfulness without going beyond it. So I like to speak about what is beyond simple mindfulness. And when we start looking beyond simple mindfulness, then we start to get into this question that you asked about what do we really mean by sense of self, and what do we mean by an expanded sense of self. So often the easiest pathway in is through the course of meditation, through the practice of meditation. And what we do in meditation, and of course there's many types of meditation, but I'll describe one particular type. What we do in meditation is we begin to examine exactly what it is that makes up our sense of self. And what is the sense of I am, or the sense of awareness that naturally arises in our experience? And so as you were describing in a conventional way, most people experience a sense of self as a deep sense of being identified with their physical body or with their sense of thinking. And what we often find as we begin to actually look into things is that there is a level of awareness that's actually deeper than thought. And what that means is that when we begin to engage in some form of meditation practice, there might be periods of time where we're not actually thinking, yet there's still an awareness that exists. And as we begin to do that scientific analysis of who we are, we begin to say, wow, I must be deeper than thought. Whatever I am, whatever awareness is, must be deeper than thought. As the journey continues, we begin to say that, wow, the same thing's true about my emotions. My emotions come and go in time. They're always changing, and I feel happy one moment, I feel sad the next, I feel a little bored in another moment. Yet there's an awareness that's somehow deeper than emotions. So that first shift is what I call a shift in a fundamental vantage point, where you start to recognize, wow, I, awareness, am deeper than my body or thoughts or emotions. But that's just the beginning of the path. And basic mindfulness can help us become aware of things like thoughts and emotions and even the physical sensations of the body, and I think that's great. But as we begin to move beyond that, we begin to enter into something that's a bit more expansive. We begin to actually do very critical analyses of who we are as a self or a personality. And we start to find that even who we are, the likes we have, the dislikes we have, that which we're attracted to, that which we have some aversion to, all of those things also are ephemeral. They change over time. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of us that's actually deeper than our likes and dislikes. There's a part of us that's fundamentally unchanged, even as our personality arises. As the path continues, there's a way in which even the sense of time and space, even the sense of right now feeling as if you're inside your body, that sense of self can become expansive. So even now in this moment as we're talking to each other, there's a sense that you can allow your awareness to expand so that it fills the entire room. So you allow your awareness to expand upward, you allow it to expand below you, in front of you, behind you, in all directions. And the people in the audience can do it too, just allowing your awareness to be open without any limitation. The people listening can always do this. And as we begin to allow our awareness to expand, as you start to look for edges to it, you start to find that there actually aren't any edges. As soon as you look, the edges recede. So you might have a mental concept, there's some edge to your awareness, but when you actually check, it's not there. So we begin to expand our sense of self by actually checking, looking. Are there actually any edges to who I am? As we begin to allow our awareness or sense of self to expand, we start to understand that, wow, I can actually enter into a level of awareness or a vantage point where I see everything around me arising in my awareness. Yes, it's outside of the physical body, outside of this personality structure, but it's inside the awareness that I am. And as the meditative path continues, there are many, many other layers of unpacking. And what we like to say is that the path is the goal. And what that means is that in any given moment, we have the opportunity to be fully awake and present to the openness of reality. And as things progress in a very natural way, there's a sense that even the sense of I-ness, or the sense of subjectivity, and that which you're observing, all the events arising in your field of awareness, even that distinction between subject and object eventually collapses. What we begin to experience is that everything in our field of awareness is actually just another expression of ourselves, another expression of the deeper sense of who we really are. And for me, in my experience, and people that I've worked with, when one can actually create, or when one can actually be inspired or speak or act from that openness, from that open space where there's non-separation, everything that you generate from that space has a certain coherence with reality. There's a certain generative quality where it's in sync with the natural harmony of the world around us, with others around us. And to me, humanity is at a particular point where we can't afford to actually create systems or businesses or companies or organizations from a position of separateness, from a position that's out of sync with reality. And there's a huge potential for us to enter into these more expansive senses of awareness, these expansive states of self, and create from those spaces where we're actually creating in a way that can be and generate a world that's truly like a heaven on earth. Mm. And my whole work, my whole teachings, always are built around inspiring not only people to gain this deeper sense of self for their own benefit, but to gain this deeper sense of self for the benefit of others and the benefit of the world. And if we can line startups up with this type of awareness and line entrepreneurs up with this type of awareness, I think the eventual possibilities are absolutely endless. Mm. And I feel so much hope and inspiration about that.
Oh, it's so good. Mm. I just want to add a little bit more to the beautiful process that you were taking us through into this expanded awareness. And I really was feeling it at an experiential level, kind of. Even as you were talking, as you were speaking, there's this, as I expand my awareness, there's a very direct felt sense that the words that you're saying are not words that come from you to me, but are spoken and heard at the same time by this, by a greater intelligence, if you will. And this is kind of, I find that these things kind of hard to describe in rational terms, because there is a certain, in a sense, a transrational process. You have to go beyond outside of a conventional understanding of the world, because the basic principles of what we believe is real and what we believe exists actually starts to change, or kind of at least we start to let go of it. Like we, you know, that's part of I think what's been often challenging to translate this deep spiritual work into Western concept, is that it is something that requires us to kind of receive it beyond our mental constructs.
Mm. It's exactly right. And I think the other thing that is sometimes a barrier is that sometimes people think that somehow having an expanded sense of self somehow negates or gets rid of the lower sense of self, if we can call it that, or the personality and all the other layers. And that's such a, in my opinion, a very limited understanding of what it means to awaken to these deeper senses of self, these expansive sense of awareness. The process of awakening, just like the process of any other type of human growth or development, is one that transcends and includes. And what that means is that as we expand to these deeper layers of awareness, these deeper aspects of reality, that always, yes, it transcends the limitation of that lower self, the limitation of the ego or the separate self, but it also includes it. That means that everything that it means to be human, everything that you bring to the table, Kirill, all your talents, your skills, your capacities, all of those things are not only included, but they're radically enhanced by this awareness. So I think, you know, yes, it's difficult to do this through some sort of mental exercise. It has to be directly experienced, and it has to be directly experienced in a way that is inclusive and integrative. But at the same time, we have to have the conceptual frameworks to understand what we're talking about. I think many people don't have the conceptual frameworks to understand that spiritual realization or spiritual awakening or upgrading consciousness is something that radically includes all of the relativity, all of the aspects of who you are that make you unique. Mm. And when we start to understand that, awakening isn't something that has to be taken separate from the world. We don't have to all become monks. We don't have to somehow be on retreat. We don't have to wear robes to be somehow special and set apart from normal everyday society. we can actually use the awakening to enhance and empower everything that we're already doing in the world. Mm-hmm. This is why this bridge right now is so fundamentally important. Now, I often explain that out of the 1960s, we found two major currents unfolding in our current culture and society. One current turned outward to the world and said, look at this world, look at the inequalities, how do we actually make the world a better place? A lot of social action, from the civil rights to major movements in women's work, all these things came as a response to the inequality we saw in the world. So there's a movement outward for social action and good. That's fantastic. At the same time, there was another camp that actually turned their awareness inward. They turned their awareness to all of the different aspects of consciousness that we weren't otherwise aware of. This group of people often explored with psychedelics, they worked with LSD and with mescaline and all these interesting studies that came out of different universities. We're at a particular point in time now where this outward orientation towards making the world an amazing place and this inward orientation to exploring the depths of consciousness, we're at a point in time when these two streams can fully come together, where it's not about awakening to consciousness and stepping away. It's also not about only being engaged in the world, but it's about awakening to these deeper aspects of ourself and deeper layers of awareness and being fully engaged. And I often say that the reason this is so important is because if you only make the consciousness move, then you could be in a cave meditating for the rest of your life and not engaging in the world, and it has no impact. If you only make the world transformation move, oftentimes people experience deep burnout because they're not seeing the type of change that they really know is needed. Mm-hmm. But when you combine these two, when you bring this deeper aspect of awakening and awareness, and you bring it fully into form through the physical body and into full action and eventual synergistic cooperation with others, there's an aspect of anything being possible and never being burned out. You can be always on and always active, always present and awake, and you can use the full strength of who we are as human beings in order to actually transform the world. And it feels like finally, after the past 40 years, 45 years of deep work from the 1960s, we're inheriting this possibility now at the very same time that startups in Silicon Valley is popping and we're at this exciting time and potential. It's almost as if we've hit the next octave of what's possible for human beings through the integration of these two streams. Mm.
Yeah, so how do they, I want to ask you, how do they organically integrate? Because in my experience, when I've had strong awakening state experiences, there's often a period of time, kind of an afterglow, where things feel incredibly spacious and peaceful, and there's just a very blissful state where it's an incredibly beautiful state, but one that perhaps at times I felt like I'm just happy, like sitting on the couch and just like looking out and listening to the birds, and it's an amazingly beautiful simplicity to just, you know, you kind of recognize how much beauty is in every moment. But what then from that takes us into action and into change and into creating change in the world? You know, like, do you find in your experience, how does that wide expanse of awareness coincide with passion, with drive, with desire, with that kind of energy of creation?
Yeah, great question. So it requires a bit of a theoretical answer, and then we can speak about real action and real experience. But on the theoretical level or conceptual level, there's an important distinction between what we might call states, whether these are ordinary states or extraordinary states, similar to the bliss that you might have been talking about. There's a difference between states and what we might call shifts in levels of identity or shifts in vantage points. So states come and go. You might sit down on the couch and be totally blissed out, even feel a sense of unity or communion with the environment around you, the people around you. And that's something that may or may not be productive. That may or may not help you be a more enhanced human being when you're actually going into the world and you're acting. Vantage points, on the other hand, is a fundamental shift in who we think we are, who we know we are. There's this word in the Sanskrit that's called jhana. Jnana, J-N-A-N-A. This is a particular word that means knowledge or insight. But in English, we also have this word gnosis. And this jhana, or this gnosis, is something that's more of a direct knowing. And it's a direct knowing that you actually aren't these lower levels of identity. as we begin to have this direct experience of knowing that we're not only or merely this self-contracted personality or self-contracted sense of time and space, what starts to happen is that that openness, that spaciousness, allows for the spontaneity of action without all of the karma getting in the way. Mm. What we often experience is that many of us, actually we were just speaking about a bit ago, many of us want to perform certain things. We have these aspirations. So I could give you a list of the 10 things that I'd want to do over the next couple of weeks. And many of us, even those things we want to do, we might only do 3 of them. If we're actually acting from an ego, that's often the case, because there's a lot of mud or sludge to move through. There's a lot of things that we're carrying with us as we're trying to act in the world. As we begin to move into these deeper aspects of awareness or deeper aspects of self, it's almost as if we get to function from a free and open space, and using that as our home base, using that as our source, we actually create in a way that we can not have all the restrictions, not have all the karmic baggage. So I'll just kind of bring it back to my own direct experience. There were many times in my life where I had an aspiration to step out more and do more teaching and meditation, things like this. These were times when I was early in my life and I had not fully stepped into a deeper sense of stable vantage point awareness, stable vantage point freedom. And what that meant was that I had the capacity to actually enter into really interesting states, but I didn't have the capacity for a stable recognition of something deeper. So what that meant is that I would enter into these states and I'd be really inspired, I'd be really creative, I'd be really excited. But when I tried to bring that into form, into generative action, it would always sort of fall short. It would fall dead in a certain way. What I began to realize is that there's a type of meditative awareness that you can bring out of just the meditation context. You can bring it into everyday life. Mm. So even right now, as we have this conversation, there's a particular form of meditative awareness that I'm bringing to it. There's a particular form of recognizing that awareness right now in this moment isn't actually refined or constricted to a relative sense of self. But right now in this moment, we actually share a deeper sense of identity. In this moment, there's a level of awareness that's beyond the exclusive identification of either of us as individual beings and consciousness. As that becomes something that can be recognized in everyday life, not just when you're meditating, our capacity to act dramatically increases, because now we're acting moment to moment from this deeper source of awareness. Mm. So this distinction between levels of self or levels of identity and states is fundamentally important, because many people think that, oh, the states are here and then they dissolve. But what they don't realize is there's an aspect of your awareness that you can perpetually recognize. There's an aspect of your awareness that you can maintain over time. And it's that aspect of awareness, that source layer of awareness, that if we act from there and create from there, we have unbelievable potentials at our hands. Mm.
I love the when you speak about spontaneity that arises and being free, free of baggage to act quickly and instantly and freely. There's also, I'm just trying to riff on that, like, please, that notion. There's also something about when we kind of start to see reality a bit more like a game, I would say. You know, like there's the word Maya that sometimes is translated as illusion. But it's not quite that. To me, I think it's more like, it's like when Neo sees through the Matrix in the movie The Matrix. Right? And there's a way in which we start to see that what we used to think of as immutable realities, the laws of nature, society, or you know, business or physics, or just mental processes, actually quite, they're constructed and they're malleable. Mm. And so we start to learn to play with them.
Beautiful.
We start to learn to, and experience joy in playing with it. Mm. So there's just a much greater space of possibilities open up. Do you find that true in your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we are able to access both these deeper layers of awareness, but also these upgraded skill levels, we begin to actually see entire systems at play. We begin to actually see some of the inner workings of what's happening. And when we do that, I like that you call it play and not illusion, because to me, using this idea of spiritual awakening to somehow exit the illusion, the whole idea of exiting to me, just like it doesn't work. Because for me, spiritual awakening is about actually being here fully and for real for the first time. It's about being reborn into reality as a new and full human being who actually sees things as they are. And so it has nothing to do with leaving, it actually has to do with coming. It has to do with being here fully. And when you're here fully from these deeper levels of awareness, absolutely, you start to see the ways in which your actions actually have deep implications. That's not only on the individual level, but on the collective level. When we begin to see that, we actually start to take responsibility, not only for who we are, but for what we do and how we're engaging in the world. And the more and more that people open to seeing the direct implications of their actions from this place of freedom, I have no doubt that they'll start making better choices not for themselves and for their families, as many people do now, but better choices for the entire world. And if we can get groups of entrepreneurs together, and we can get groups of people who are computer programmers together, or working with artificial intelligence together, whatever it might be, when we get these people together and we can actually help them enter into this source realization, this realization of source awareness, and then we can help them actually generate or create from source, there's a potential for deeper synergy and collaboration like it's never been here before. Because everybody in a certain way will be creating in a way that's harmonious with reality and in a certain way asynchronistically coordinated with each other. So it's almost like there's a deeper intelligence that allows itself to flow through us when we create from source versus creating or generating from this contracted self.
Yeah.
So I think you're exactly right. It becomes a game, but it's a game that matters because we care.
Mm-hmm.
We care deeply about everyone and everything in the game because we start to understand that we're not actually different from them. We're not actually separate from them. That yes, there's a game happening, and it's a game that deeply matters because of how much love we feel in our hearts for the entire program, for the entire game itself.
Mm. Just to elaborate on what you said, creating from source, I think what you're tracking is really the source of creation. So in my experience, there becomes this simultaneous awareness of just me as a person, as a manifestation, but also simultaneously of the creative source. And as that, I exist quite literally in everything around me, in you. So there's this sense of unity, and I think the responsibility that you speak of is actually, it's not an egoic responsibility of like, oh, is it my fault or not, but it's actually a deep responsibility that arises from our deep interconnectedness.
Yeah, exactly right.
And that everything I do affects you and everything you do affects me.
Exactly. So it's actually, you know, people sometimes use this term enlightened self-interest. I don't necessarily ascribe to or dislike that term, but there's something interesting about it. In that it's not that we have some sort of responsibility that we feel from separateness. So we normally hear that word responsibility and some of us recoil a bit. We're like, what do you mean I have this responsibility? And so that's not the type of responsibility we're talking about. What we're talking about is something much closer to what you're describing, where because we actually feel on a whole new level, because we know and experience on a whole new level how everything we do affects everything else, the responsibility is actually one that it holds the whole as we move forward. So not only do we create from source, but we're creating from wholeness and into wholeness. And if we look at some of the systems in our world today, if we look at the basic financial system that assumes perpetual growth indefinitely, yet we have a planet that has limited resources, then obviously we see that there's a financial system that's not actually based on reality, it's based on some sort of abstraction. When we begin to feel and experience and know everything else and the way that it affects everything else, there's a way that we naturally want our financial systems and economic systems to be much more sustainable, much more generative. And when we create systems from source, when we generate or manifest from source, there's a way that we are so much more open to things that are coherent with reality. And so I think your point is exactly right. There's a way that if we come from this deeper layer of awareness, from these deeper aspects of self, there's a way that something like Startup Shaman could really be the thing that does make the difference in the world.
That's great. And I know you're working on a bit similar project together with Dan Brown, who's an incredibly famous meditation teacher and your teacher,
yes.
Where you work with a bit of executives. So maybe can you tell a bit more about this project?
Great. So I've been working for the past couple of years on something called the Human Program. Mm-hmm. And the Human Program specifically targets executives, CEOs, and people of high net worth who have high-level influence. Mm. And that's at least what it's doing now. That won't be what it's doing always, but that's the particular echelon that we've chosen to work with. There's also a certain celebrity component involved. And our work is really about how do we create the most highly customized, highly individualized human growth program on Earth. And we were talking earlier about upgrading systems. Our thesis is that if we can work with these highly influential individuals, we can help upgrade their systems, their inner operating systems, mm-hmm. as you would call it. There's a way that that would have a massive impact on society. If we can get CEOs to start feeling the sense of interconnectedness, the sense of connectivity with everyone and everything around them, not only the people in their company, but the entire planet, the decisions made will not only be more sustainable, but they'll be generative in a way that actually increases well-being on the planet, not just sort of abstracting and consuming others' well-being in order for a small group's benefit. And so far, we're not only working with Dan Brown, who's my meditation teacher, but we've also involved an American philosopher named Ken Wilber. Mm-hmm. Ken Wilber is one of the most brilliant thinkers on how do we actually help all of these disparate pieces from different industries and different sectors of society, how do we help all these pieces fit together into more of a holistic view or holistic perspective? And so it's working with both Dan and Ken and some of the very best coaches and therapists around in the world. We've been able to assemble a team to go in sort of like Marine Corps or like, you know, ninjas, ninja ops. And we go in and we actually help create customized programs to upgrade people's consciousness. We sometimes call it, it's like a pop-up development agency. Mm-hmm. We can pop up in any particular circumstance and we can dive right in a way that actually individualizes and customizes programs for individuals and groups. That's something that anybody listening to this can check out on. It's thehumanprogram.com. Mm. And we're certainly available to pop up anywhere that the listeners might be.
Mm. That sounds great. And is there, do you find a bit of difference between like who you're working with? Like, does everybody have kind of their own path or the pretty universal principles or pieces of content that are really effective in creating the kind of development?
Yeah, great. So we use a model that we call the four Fs. This is the universal content, and then beyond that, everything's customized. Mm-hmm. So the first F is one that we call fullness. Mm. Fullness refers to the ways in which all of us as human beings have certain aspects of ourselves that are not fully integrated. And the basic therapeutic techniques are designed to actually create more fullness in the human being. So we take these parts that are split off or are underdeveloped, who might have trauma, and we actually begin to heal them. So the first element is fullness. But there's also a second element to fullness, and that's this capacity to actually grow and enhance to these higher stages of development. That's the F, first F. The second F is something that we call flourishing. Mm-hmm. Flourishing draws on everything that we have from the traditions of positive psychology. This is basic peak performance. This is how to actually live a happy and fulfilled life. And these elements of flourishing are something that most people don't even know, that we have a science and a technology that's been researched now for several decades around what it means to live a full and happy life. So the second F is flourishing. How do we help human beings flourish? The third F is something we call freedom. Freedom really draws on the basic meditative technologies that have come from both East and West that help us understand how to expand beyond our limited sense of self, our limited personality. Just as we were talking about earlier, this is a kind of upgrading that allows us to enter into more of a universal awareness. So freedom. So we have fullness, flourishing, and freedom. The last F we call, it's actually two Fs, we combine into one, full functioning. So if you have a sense of fullness, where you've integrated a deeper sense of self, you've expanded into these higher aspects of development. If you have a second F of flourishing, if you know how to live a full and happy life, and if you have this third F of freedom, when all those Fs are combined, we say that for the first time, you're actually a fully functioning human being. Mm. And so the Human Program is designed entirely around this whole dimension of these four Fs. And within that, we have an infinite variety of practices and programs and teachings that we can offer. And we have a stellar team of people who work with people one-on-one. So in that sense, yes, there's some universal structure, but beyond that, it's infinitely customizable.
Mm. Amazing. Mm. Can you name a person or two that is a public figure that you think is close to the kind of level of realization that you're striving to take people to? Are there good examples out there in the public sphere?
That's such a good question. Mm. Because without examples, we really don't have any direction as human beings. Mm. One of the things that I've tried to do with something I've been calling Bright Alliance. Bright Alliance is a constellation of people in the world who I really think are exemplars. What we've tried to do is, just like you're doing interviews, we do series of interviews, but also create multimedia courses and videos and things like this. And where I've started with that is I've started with people who have, in a certain sense, at least begun the journey, if not fully mastered, at least begun the journey with these four Fs. So they are people who are actually showing up in the world who can be exemplars, or what I call North Stars for humanity. Because one of the things I think that's limited in our culture is that most, for whatever reason, most people look to celebrities and to models and to politicians. Most people look to these people who are somehow thrown in our face through magazines and through newspapers as the idols of what it means to be human. And to me, we're at a point in time now where, now that we know everything we know about human potential, we need to have new exemplars around the world from every culture and from every tradition that can actually show us what's possible. And so you ask me if I can think of any examples, and I don't think we have very many good public examples of human potential. I think I've been fortunate enough to study with someone like Ken Wilber. I think Ken is someone who's developed an extremely high capacity of both structural development, so cognitive complexity, capacity for care, capacity for love, also a very high capacity for this deeper sense of spiritual realization, spiritual awakening. I think Ken's an interesting example of a public figure. I know that we have other people who are also very interested in meditation and things like this. And as we expand our horizons of what's possible, I think something like a Bright Alliance, something like human exemplars who are actually holding this, is something that's become much more popular in our culture. And maybe one of the things that we can team up on between Startup Shaman and Bright Alliance is actually promoting and helping the world see that there's so much possible. Mm. And through giving people platforms, through giving people these opportunities to shine, I think maybe you and I together can help people understand and see what is possible by providing this exemplar.
Mm. I would love that. Mm. Mm. So maybe as a takeaway from this conversation, is there something that you could offer to our audience as maybe a simple practice or something they can do to deepen or to activate some of this kind of awakeness that we talked about?
Yeah, well, maybe I can offer two. Uh-huh. So the first one is something I call embedding yourself in an evolutionary ecosystem. Mm. So when we start to understand that development is real, when we understand that upgrades are possible, mm-hmm. we have a certain responsibility. And that responsibility is one where we need to embed ourselves in ecosystems or communities of people that help to totally enhance our potential to upgrade. So what I often like to say is that in a healthy evolutionary ecosystem, you always have people who you can mentor, no matter how old you are. It doesn't matter if you're listening to this and you're 12 years old or you're listening to this and you're 75. Find people who you know a bit more about in a particular domain that you can serve, that you can serve the growth and development and enhancement of who they are. So all of us need to be upgraders. Upgraders mm. passing down any wisdom we've learned. Mm. That's point one. The second part of evolution ecosystem is that you have to surround yourself by people who are at a similar level of development as you. That means you surround yourself by peers, people who can actually, you can be intimate with, who can check and balance decisions you're making, who you can check in with. The third is that each of us in an evolutionary ecosystem should find people who can help us upgrade, find mentors, people who are more developed than us in particular areas. And the more that we do that, the more we actually open the floodgates for our own potential. And so that's the first piece, that each of us should consciously embed ourselves in evolutionary ecosystems. Mm-hmm. If we find that we're not, then you often find that as soon as you start mentoring someone, a mentor will show up for you. Mm-hmm. Or as soon as you step into a mentor relationship with somebody else, you'll find that people begin to enter into your sphere who you can mentor. Mm-hmm. The thing we need to break is this culture of mediocrity that we currently live in, where people don't even know development is real. Mm-hmm. People don't know that evolution or upgrading is possible. Mm-hmm. So the only way we break that is by starting this vertical pattern of mentoring others and being mentored and having peers. So that'd be practice one to embed into your life. The other is that every day, in addition to doing some sort of practice around becoming more aware of what's happening, that's what we call mindfulness, just being aware and present, start to ask yourself, where is my awareness? And that simple question might seem like it couldn't activate much, but in fact, it's profound. Because most of us assume that our awareness is in our head behind our eyes. But when you actually start to look and you start to feel the different sensations in your body, you start to recognize, wow, my awareness is also where those sensations are right now. It's in the bottoms of my feet. Or, wow, it's in my chest. So you begin to realize, well, awareness isn't just behind my eyes and my head, it's actually in my whole bodily field of sensation. Then as you look even further, you can start to realize that, well, if I feel up above me or below me, or if I feel in front of me or in back of me, there's a certain feeling awareness that's there too. There's a quality of actually not being confined even within my physical body. And so the practice would be to start asking yourself, where's my awareness? And as you do that process of inquiry and you actually start checking and feeling, you'll notice that your awareness naturally expands beyond its limitations and the conceptual understandings of who you think you are. So asking yourself where your awareness is and consciously embedding yourself in an evolutionary ecosystem. These are two things that can dramatically enhance our experience as both individuals and a collective human species.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've been actually doing it, the second practice with my wife Lucy, since upon your suggestion after we met about a month ago, and it's been so incredibly powerful and simple. And sometimes I wouldn't hate to anyone. She's like, how's your awareness right now? And I sometimes like, oh, it's totally not wide. And it's kind of funny, but also just it's such a simple practice, like widen it back up again. And you can do it in a few instances. And it's just like a beautiful reminder of how we just forget. We just forget our like a fullness, you know, and in a sense, going through life, sometimes you have to focus it, but then to just remember, oh yeah, but that's not all of me. It's not just in the project. It's not just the problem that I'm looking at right now. I'm always the full totality of experience.
That's right. And, you know, I know that listeners will have different levels of experience and practice, but what's so profound about what you're saying is that we begin to recognize that we can actually always maintain a sense of awareness about our awareness. We can always maintain a sense of knowing that we are this more expanded open field. And even as we focus on things, there's an aspect of our awareness that cannot forget. And so the goal is in upgrading consciousness, you know, the goal, and who knows how many upgrades are after that, but the goal is to maintain a level of awareness where you're always open and always free. And you always feel not only connected to everything else, but you know yourself to be not separate. That you are a single undivided whole. And that single undivided whole actually cares about everything that's arising in its field. And it's that combination of care or love and awareness that, to me, sets the foundation for this new culture that's possible on our planet. A few years ago, a group of us started something called Synergy Forum. It's a group of us that emerged out of a collaboration in Switzerland. And we had three basic principles. The first was source, the second was unique emanation, and the last was collective synergy. And what we found was that those of us who could in some sense access these deeper layers of awareness, or some sense access this source awareness, as that source awareness poured through each of our unique emanations, each of our unique capacities. The emanation meaning who we are as beings when we're individuated, who we are as beings as unique forms. So as that source awareness started to pour through our unique emanations, we found that there was a level of connectivity with other people, unlike anything we'd experienced, because you actually understand on a fundamental level that you're not separate from others. And so if we say that source awareness is opening the head, it's opening up this sense of awareness, we can start to feel that this level of connectivity with others comes through the heart. And that's connectivity with the person that you're creating with or generating with, but it's also connectivity to everything and everyone around you. But then we realize that from that space of connection, from that unique emanation as we came together, this collective synergy began to emerge. And that to me is like bringing creation all the way down into the belly and into the base. And when we allow our awareness or creative process to start in this open source of awareness, move through the heart and then down into the base, there's something that happens where we begin to feel like we enter into a common field or a common experience together, where we find ourselves in rhythm and in sync with the other person. There's an explosive quality of potential and creativity that comes through, where it's almost as if you're both downloading the same idea together, but just each uniquely with your own paintbrush painting it into form. And that process is one that is just absolutely incredible. So co-creation to me is actually, in a certain way, the whole point. Realization or recognition is fundamentally important. And there's something incredible that happens with that, and there's a level of freedom and contentment that comes with that. But when you bring that realization into co-creativity with another human being through the heart, through the base, there's a way that we can bring forth into the world and really, literally, create a heaven on earth that we know is possible. And it's in that generative quality of manifesting or creating together that I feel so inspired by. That's why the universe, as many people have said, the universe is actually a big yes. The universe isn't a big no. The universe didn't create itself as an accident that somehow it's an illusion that we need to get out of. Yes, we need to see through separateness. We need to come into a holistic view of reality. And ultimate reality is unbounded wholeness, and that we are that. Yes, we need to come to know that. And then in that reality, we can actually play, create, manifest together everything that we know is possible. And to me, there's nothing more exciting than that.
Oh, I feel so inspired by that. Thanks so much, Dustin. It was so great having you.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me here, and thank you for taking the time to do the interview. And thanks also to the people who are here in the audience, and thank you to the people who are listening. And if for anybody interested, you can find out more at brightalliance.org, Bright Alliance, or at dustindiperna.com. That's dustindiperna.com. And I'd love to meet all of you, and would certainly love to work with you in upgrading your inner operating systems anytime.
Thank you so much, Dustin.
Thank you, Kirill.
Thank you.